As we've been reporting, President Biden says we should have enough vaccine doses by the end of May to cover every adult in this country. And we're learning more about the third vaccine on the market, the single dose option of Johnson & Johnson. But we put a call out to you to find out your most pressing questions about the vaccines on the market. And we'll start with some of the most common ones we received. And with us to answer some of them is Dr. Ruth Caron. She's a professor of international health in the Bloomberg School of Public Health at Johns Hopkins. She's also the director for the Center of Immunization Research. And Dr. Caron, welcome.
Good afternoon, Tanya. It's great to be with you.
Yes, it's great to have you. We received more than 24 questions from our audience, and we'll get to as many as we can in this conversation and on our website hereandnow.org. One common question we continue to receive is about the vaccine in pregnant women. As we've reported, pregnant women were not part of the clinical trials. The WHO and the CDC recommends pregnant women check with their doctors before receiving it. And here's a question from listener Key of Singapore, who is 3 weeks pregnant. She asks, I received the first and second dose on January 24th and February 14th, respectively. I discovered I'm about 3 weeks pregnant. I would like to know if there has been any adverse effects of the vaccine at such an early stage of pregnancy. Doctor?
Yes. So as you said, Tanya, there haven't yet been trials of either the Pfizer-BioNTech or the Moderna vaccines in pregnant women, although Pfizer is just now beginning a 4,000-person study in pregnant women in the U.S. and several countries in Europe and Africa. Having said that, there were some women who were pregnant, didn't perhaps know they were pregnant, who were enrolled in the Pfizer trial. There were about 12 of those women. And we don't know of any adverse effects. What I would actually suggest to this, I didn't know this individual was in Singapore, and I hope that they have a similar process in Singapore. Here in the U.S., pregnant women who receive vaccine can register through the VSafe registry at the CDC. And we would encourage every pregnant woman who gets COVID vaccine to participate in that registry. That's a way that we will be able to get real-world evidence of how this vaccine works in pregnant women, in addition to the trial that Pfizer is just beginning now.
Oh, this is wonderful information. And we'll have more information on that CDC registry at our website. Thank you so much for that. Another question we've been getting is about the side effects of the vaccine. This one is from Jessica Tong of Niceville, Florida. And she wants to know, what happens to your muscle cells that express the spike protein after receiving the COVID vaccination? What happens to the spike protein over time that is on muscle cell surfaces?
So most of what we know about this, we know from some animal studies that were done of these vaccines before they were given to humans. And what we can say is that probably the spike protein stays on your muscle cells for about a week or two. It also actually goes into your lymph nodes in your armpit, underneath, which is good because that's where a lot of the antibody-producing cells are made. And then it's metabolized. The muscle cells don't break down from that specifically. They do over time. You know, muscle cells are cells that die and are regenerated, but that's what happens to that spike protein. It's not there forever and ever. It's there for probably a finite period of time.
We're learning so much about our bodies and how our bodies work through all of this. Right now, the COVID vaccines are for people 16 years old and older. But we had a few questions from folks who were still confused about this. For instance, some people asked us, what's the difference between, say, a 15-year-old who weighs the same as an adult woman? What physiologically is the difference?
So there are a few things. One is that we always want to have data from the population in which we're administering the vaccine. So adolescents, just because they weigh the same, might be bigger than a 15-year-old boy might be bigger than a 25-year-old woman, potentially. But their metabolism is different, and their immune response may be different. In fact, sometimes children's immune responses are actually can be more vigorous than adults. So one thing just to say is that about children in general, because I know this is a question that many people have, Pfizer and Moderna are both doing studies in children, conducting studies in children. They are going gradually down in age. They want really to assess if the vaccines are safe in these ages, and they, in some cases, they're also going down in dose. They also want to look at the immune response in these children. So those studies are proceeding. Pfizer has actually, I believe, completed their study in the 12 to 16 year age group and will be over time submit. They've completed enrollment and they will be submitting those data to the FDA, and they will continue to move down in age.
This is from Jessica of Tucson, Arizona, and she asks, is there any correlation between the strength of an individual's immune system and the intensity of their response to the vaccine?
So what I would say, I think the very good news, we don't have one specific measure where we can look at the strength of an individual immune system. But what we do know about these vaccines, which is wonderful and very reassuring, is that they work across a very wide age spectrum. And that's very reassuring because we do have some vaccines that, for example, don't work as well in the elderly or don't work as well in people with those conditions. So we can say that they really work very well across a range of people with different kinds of immune responses.
Passover starts on March 27th. And it's generally celebrated with family and friends. After receiving both doses of the vaccine for Passover, we have a listener, Linda Bloomstein of West Bloomfield, Michigan, who wants to know if she can still get together with her family. Dr. Ruth, I'm sure a lot of people are making this calculation as they become fully inoculated. What do you recommend they do?
So I think I do get these kinds of questions, variations on this question very
yes.
often. And I may disappoint people because I won't give them a simple yes or no answer. And what I would say is that vaccinated people should be thinking about, number one, protection of themselves, number two, protection of their loved ones, and number three, protection of society. And so some of the questions as people are thinking about whether they're going to get together with others who might even be vaccinated is, one, are the people that I'm planning to gather with vaccinated? And is everyone in their household vaccinated? So you might be getting together with another vaccinated couple, but they've come from their house where they have three other unvaccinated individuals, and could you potentially transmit to them and then have them transmit to unvaccinated household members? And then the last question, of course, is what kind of travel is involved? And I would say that people really need to conform to their state's regulations around that. So meaning, I know in my state of Maryland, if you travel outside of the state or outside of our area, you need to either provide a negative COVID test or quarantine for 10 days when you come back still. So it's important to follow those rules. Those are the kinds of things that I think people should be thinking about and asking themselves and asking of the people that they want to gather with.
Dr. Ruth Guerin is a professor of international health in the Bloomberg School of Public Health at Johns Hopkins. She's also the director of the Center for Immunization Research. And we will try to answer a few more of your questions. You can find those answers at hereandnow.org. Dr. Ruth Guerin, thank you so much for taking the time to answer some of our listener questions.
Thank you so much, Tanya.